that there is mineralization there and relatively rapidly move it forward to compliant pounds in the ground, because we think those pounds in the ground are where the leverage is for both an M&A cycle and as uranium prices start to run higher. So if we can do that rapidly with relatively low capex, again, utilizing a lot of the historic data, that's where we think there's a lot of leverage.
Drew Zimmerman, Noble Plains Uranium. Good morning to you, my friend. How are you?
I'm great, Andy, and happy to be on with you.
Yeah, really looking forward to our talk here. To all my viewers and listeners, I'm a very bullish uranium. This is an interesting project here. What's most interesting about it is it's really getting, it's still relatively new. I mean that in the sense of, new, the story needs to be getting out there. And so if you're looking for a new story, this is something you want to pay attention to. Drew, give me a 30,000 foot view of what you guys are doing and really the company mission here.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that intro. And I myself am incredibly bullish on the uranium space. But I think when it comes to our mission, it's important to understand that, you know, we think we've got a lot of leverage at $70 uranium at current prices, and, you know, just that much more leverage when the uranium price starts to move higher again, which I am a firm believer that we will start to see. So Noble Plains is building a portfolio of projects that we want to bring forward, trying to remove some of the geological risk that's normally inherent in a junior exploration company by going after projects that have historic data. So we've already done that. We've got three projects in very, you know, known basins, the Shirley Basin in Wyoming and the Powder River Basin as well. So again, Wyoming, one of the best states, a real backbone for uranium production in the United States, about over half actually of their uranium production that they've had historically. So again, it's taking on these projects that we're then able to utilize this historic data to know that there is mineralization there, and relatively rapidly move it forward to compliant pounds in the ground, because we think those pounds in the ground are where the leverage is for both an M&A cycle and as uranium prices start to run higher. So if we can do that rapidly with relatively low capex, again, utilizing a lot of the historic data, that's where we think there's a lot of leverage. The other aspect that's key to our sort of mission statement right now is to be targeting ISR amenable projects. We think, especially domestically, there's, you know, less desire for, you know, big open pit mining like that was done historically in the United States for uranium. So ISR is basically a well field where you're almost leaving, you know, the surface undisturbed to some degree, and mining the ore body out with just a series of drill holes and fluids running through that ore body. So again, a very cost-effective way to mine, and then also very environmentally friendly when compared to traditional mining methods. So a lot of different levers in the story and strategy that we have that we think can create value without having, you know, really, really big capex. And what that means is leverage to the uranium share price for our shareholders without as much dilution as you would see if you were taking on a greenfield project and needing to do, you know, rounds of geophysics and then rounds of drilling to hopefully find a mineralized ore body. So we're taking a lot of those early steps out with a big pipeline of projects that we've just been digging through to make sure that we're, you know, ending on very good projects to be able to bring into the company to be able to provide that leverage to the uranium spot price for our shareholders.
Got it. So, well, if you could answer this for all of our viewers and listeners that don't know, define ISR for me, if you would.
Yeah, absolutely. ISR is in situ recovery, and we're seeing that a lot. You know, we plaster it everywhere because, you know, we're proud of what we're doing and trying to go after with that. But if you're not in the mining space or in uranium mining, especially, it's not a familiar term. So what that would mean is if you've got your ore body, you would have basically groundwater always flowing through that ore body in the sandstone for uranium that it's hosted in. So we drill, you know, outside monitoring wells And then you would put a fluid down one well, it goes through the ore body, extracts the uranium, and up another well that you would pump it back to surface and be able to process that uranium out of it. So you can do that with satellite facilities, which again are lower capex, and then bring the concentrated uranium to a central processing facility. Or again, some projects have the central processing facility right there, but it's a series of wells rather than a big, you know, open pit mine where you're going after the ore body. So again, much less surface disturbance and a lower environmental footprint.
Got it. So, and it's a lot more cost effective, correct me if I'm wrong.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, especially with, you know, some of the projects that we're looking at, you know, we're looking at depths of, you know, 400 feet to the lowest part of these mineralized bodies. So very effective for, you know, what you have to do to be able to set them up.
Got it. So let's talk about Wyoming here. And let's talk about, if you can, pounds in the ground and grade. Correct me if I'm wrong, Wyoming is huge with uranium. And this is not an issue, but you typically want to look at pounds of the ground versus grade with Wyoming, because it's typically much lower grade, but there's a lot of it. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. So again, it comes to mining methods, when it comes to grade. So again, if you're going and, you know, needing to take a rock out of the earth, for example, you need that rock to be, you know, fairly high grade, where if you're doing in situ recovery, you know, you can have much lower grade. So again, it would be sort of the two examples. Maybe people are more familiar with gold. If you're going after a vein system, you know, you need very high grade veins because you're, you know, digging down deep and moving a lot of rock just to get the vein. Where if you're in an area like Nevada, for example, you're doing big heap leaches, which is basically above ground in situ recovery to some degree, but you're using a much lower grade and moving a lot more dirt. So we're doing that same process just underground. So you're able to have very economic deposits at, you know, an average grade of, you know, 0.2 or even lower percentage uranium, where, you know, if you look at Cigar Lake run by Cameco in northern Saskatchewan, its average grade is 17%, but it's going, you know, hundreds of meters underground with, you know, frozen earth and all the logistics that come with that. So two very different sort of economic models. And yes, Wyoming is built now. Again, back in the 50s, there was, you know, more open pit mining, but now really built on in situ recovery mines. So they've got several key basins, you know, are operating. And in Wyoming's history, there was over 240 million pounds of production. Again, over half of the United States production coming out of this state. So it's a very important state when it comes to domestic uranium production. And as the United States basically went to producing no uranium on its own and starting to pick back up again, Wyoming's going to be a very central part of that story. And we think the basins that we're operating in, Shirley Basin and the Powder River Basin, are going to be names that you're going to continue to hear a lot about as that domestic ramp up continues.
Yeah. And it's interesting too. I just learned this probably, I don't know, 2-3 months ago, because I was grade, they say grade is king, but, and I would agree with that somewhat. That being said, not as much as in uranium, and you got to be, correct me if I'm wrong here, Drew, you got to be careful with getting grade in uranium, because especially in an open pit, right? Because it makes it quite toxic. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah. I mean, again, that's pretty extreme levels. Like you're going to see really only in northern Saskatchewan, that's really going to become any sort of issue. I mean, if you were out there eating the rocks, then it's an issue, but when it's just outside the body, it's a pretty safe thing to be doing.
Yeah. Got it. Okay. So tell me about, Wyoming getting permitted and everything. And I know, just for all of our viewers and listeners, I know it to be a very friendly, if not the most friendly, jurisdiction in the U.S. as far as uranium mining, but talk to me about the jurisdiction, the ease of getting permitted, and talk to me about infrastructure. What do you have around to power and that sort of things to make all of this happen?
Yeah, I mean, it really always comes down to we're not doing anything new. You know, they've been mining uranium since 1950. Yes, some years where, you know, that flattened out, didn't go anywhere. But when you're, you know, going into a jurisdiction that's very familiar with the work that you're doing, it's a well-oiled process. So, you know, there's different aspects to it. If there's state leases or mineral claims on BLM ground, different nuances to different projects, that sort of thing. But it's an area that you can, you know, very effectively move things forward. And I think, you know, we're able to showcase that with our Shirley Central project. We acquired less than 2 months ago and just put out a news release this week that we'd obtained drill permits for our 22 hole program to sort of confirm some of the historical density there. And again, when it comes to infrastructure, I mean, we are right on the edge of UR Energy's Shirley Basin project. Some of their, you know, permitted land is actually on our claims. That's just how close we are adjoining them. And they're building a satellite facility for that 8.8 million pound resource that they have at Shirley Basin. In the Powder River Basin, we're adjoined to Cameco's Smith Ranch project. So again, that's a project that Cameco's got, you know, 32 million pounds in the ground there. They made a production decision in 2016, just based on the economics of where uranium prices were at that time, to shut it down. So it stopped producing in 2018. But again, the infrastructure's there. They've kept it on care and maintenance. Everything is, you know, built out in these areas that we're at. And, you know, again, our projects now are right next to, you know, facilities that are about to be producing or have produced and potentially going back into production. So it's a good area to be in that has, you know, seen a lot of production over its history and in the state. It's also an agreement state, which means the NRC, the National Regulatory Commission for Uranium, has passed down the ability to the state. So again, it's easier to, you know, deal at the state level than having to go all the way to a federal agency, which helps speed things up as well. So it's a very good area to be working. We're in, you know, very good spots in a good state to be working. And I think, again, coming back to our main strategy, being able to sort of very rapidly move these or advance these projects towards our goal of being able to delineate a resource on our project.
Got it. Talk to me about the projects here. You have three different projects, is that correct? And tell me about each one.
Yeah, we've got three. We've got two in the Shirley Basin and one in the Powder River. So our Shirley East was the first project that the company picked up in the uranium space. It's more on the exploration edge of what we have, you know, and we ran a drill program on that property last year. Since we've, you know, acquired a little bit more historical data, which would help guide a future program, as well as that drilling that we did. So we never really hit, you know, a big mineralization factor, but with an ore body, you kind of have tails on it. And we believe we hit that tail section, and with some more exploration drilling could potentially hit a much more mineralized ore body. We recently, I believe it was about 10 days or so, expanded that with staking that covered some, again, historical data that we'd picked up of higher density drilling. So again, back in the day, they did sort of just big, you know, drill patterns. And when they got into a higher mineralized area, they would really jam the density of their drilling together to see if it would make sense to have an open pit mine there. So when we see that, we know there's higher grades of mineralization in that area, and how we've been able to utilize some of the historic data without having, you know, drill logs just from that spacing of the drilling. And then we were able to pick up just to the north, our Shirley Central, again, very, very close to Shirley East. But that was a key project for us, again, knowing that there was very high density of drilling in sort of six different pods. And these pods were between historic open pits where they had been mining. So, you know, we know there's significant mineralization on the project. And that was the project that we've now just moved through to, moved all the way through permitting, have 22 drill holes ready to go on that, that we think we can go in and confirm in those six pods, sorry, that there is mineralization there. And what grade and what level that will be at. And we think, you know, potentially being able to move that towards a compliant resource relatively quickly, which would be very, very exciting for us. So some good news coming on that. We do want to be drilling that. We're sort of setting it up for the later part of September. So a little over a month away, which will be exciting. And then the sort of flagship now that we have in the company is our Duck Creek project in the Powder River Basin. So when we were able to acquire this, we were also able to acquire 4,000 drill holes and the data that comes with those, very clearly sort of outlining a 3-mile trend of mineralization. We're just in the process right now of being able to close that transaction and release a new 43-101 that was written by a third party that's very popular in the area, to be able to bookmark, you know, what that exploration target of pounds in the ground looks like. And again, we have modeled that data and we're, you know, very confident in what that number is within those
bookmarks. Can you talk about that? Not yet.
Not yet. It will be something that will be coming out with that 43-101. And it will come on the closing of that transaction. So that will be coming very, very closely. And again, this is a project that is in the Powder River Basin, right next to Cameco's 32 million pounds, you know, to our north and south. We've got two uranium energy company projects that again, add over another 14 million pounds between the two of them. And we've got GTI Energy and their La Herma project just to the west, another 8.7 compliant pounds there, and Global Uranium and Enrichment, their Pine Ridge project that they're currently drilling right now. So again, this cluster of, you know, call it 25 kilometers where we've got over, you know, 55 million of compliant pounds and probably another 30 to 50 million pounds of exploration pounds in the ground. And that's why I say you're going to hear a lot more about, you know, this area of the Powder River Basin, because as domestic production looks to ramp back up, it's going to be hubs like this and centers like this that are going to be part of being able to add a meaningful number of pounds to the market. So we're very happy to be advancing a project that is right in the center of that.
Yeah, no, I would agree with you. Yes, I would agree with you. These projects, different projects. This is really, to all my viewers and listeners, this is really where you want to be, just with all of the changes, the good changes that are coming, really just for energy, for cheaper, clean energy, if you would. Now you mentioned too, correct me if I'm wrong, do you have a third project there?
No, sorry. That Duck Creek was our third. So we have the two in Shirley, and then Duck Creek in the Powder River Basin.
Got it. Okay. Let's talk a little bit about cash in the bank, share structure. How much money do you have? Are you fully financed to drill, if you were, until the end of the year? And how many shares do you have fully diluted? And tell me where your options and warrants are written.
Yeah, I mean, again, we're a pretty fresh story just coming out of the gates. So we did a $1.3 million financing at 6 cents. I think we're trading at about 12 cents here today. All those shares are free trading as of the last week or so. Again, shareholders that are really believing in the story of what we're trying to accomplish here over the next, you know, 18 to 24 months, not over the first 4 months. And we've done a lot in those first 4 months. So out of that, you know, we've been using our money for the exploration and the acquisition that we have after closing of Duck Creek. We'll be a little under $500,000 in the bank. So again, been very effective with our treasury to this point. That is enough for, you know, the Shirley Central project that we have going, and permitted right now. Again, these drill programs in comparison to other programs, because especially on Shirley Central, I mean, these holes are going to be, you know, 400 feet deep. You know, we think a 22 hole program at max might be a couple hundred thousand Canadian dollars. So very effective drill campaigns that you can have in this area because of the depth and the type of well that you're drilling. And for us, the cap table is still very tight getting started. So we're at 55 million shares outstanding. There is a warrant at 10 cents, 23 million of those. And again, as we sort of get a few of these other catalysts that we've gone through here in the last 15 minutes or so, you know, there is the potential that we start to pull in some of those warrants, and that would be, you know, 2.3 million Canadian if we pulled all of those in at 10 cents. So again, a good cost-effective way to raise additional capital without doing a full new financing. and options for the directors and management as we were just getting started. I believe we're all around 7 cents, some at 8 cents. So again, a story that is just getting going and really being able to build momentum. And we think at, you know, today's share price, a 6 or 7 million market cap, a pretty significant upside when you're looking at sort of the pounds in the ground that we think we can get to, you know, very near term. And ultimately, you know, our much bigger goal of saying, you know, I've publicly stated this, I want to be over 20 million pounds of compliant resource in 18 to 24 months. So, you know, that means we're going to continue to move quickly. It means we're going to move effectively and efficiently on the projects we already have. But we're always evaluating an additional pipeline of projects that we think we can bring into the company at the right price that can move us along that pounds in the ground sort of pipeline that we've laid out. So it's going to be a good thing. And again, I will emphasize, we think this strategy makes a lot of sense and gives investors a lot of upside at $70 uranium. And I'm doing this because I don't think there's a chance in hell that we stay at $70 uranium. I think there's so much going on in the sector that is a tailwind for uranium prices to go higher, that, you know, those tailwinds will just help us that much more and make it that much more exciting for our shareholders if we're able to build those pounds in the ground like we think we can, and the inherent leverage that will come to those, and, you know, what we've seen in the M&A cycle already in the uranium space.
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit more about that, just the outlook for uranium. But first, to all my viewers and listeners, I am not a geologist. I am not typically out in the field. What I am is an investor, and I typically meet so many different companies, whether it's in person at shows or here in Atlanta. They all come through, and I'm constantly evaluating. And one of my evaluations, and you guys hit it out of the park, is share structure. I want to see. It really depends on where they're at in the process, if you would, in the curve. But I'd like to see under 100 million shares outstanding at first, and you're at 55 million. So that is, to all my viewers and listeners, that's very, very tight. Okay. It's just hard to move a stock with much more than 100 million out there. So you're well under that. Another thing that I look at is, where are the options and warrants written? And right now you're significantly in the money if you look at it on a percentage basis. So that's, music to my ears. So all my viewers and listeners, I am not an investor as of right now of Noble Uranium, but that could very well change over the next several weeks, and more than likely will change. That is not an endorsement. And Drew, no idea who's going to say this, but that is not an endorsement of the company. Do your own due diligence. Drew, talk to me just about uranium. I'm a hyperbole uranium. I see uranium, really, if you look, if you compare it to something like gold or silver, the metals, I see this maybe 2020, 21, very similar, if you would. We had a spike up 18 months ago, but I see it very similar to 2021 in the gold market, where the gold market's almost doubled over the last 2 to 3 years. And I see uranium, I'm not saying uranium is going to double, but I see it being significantly higher over the next 18 to 24 months. Talk to me about your outlook. I'm sure we share the same thing, but why uranium? Why is it going? Why do we think it's going much higher?
Yeah. There's the energy demand side of things. And we're obviously seeing that, you know, step up in a big way. We're seeing the power grids, not only in the United States, but all of them they're getting stretched. We need more energy, and in the United States right now, we're seeing an administration and in Chris Wright at the Department of Energy saying, we will do whatever we can to create more energy because that is what we need. And it's a bit of, you know, the AI arms race going on right now that's really powering that. But again, it's a global energy picture that, you know, we're seeing more and more energy being demanded everywhere. And unfortunately right now, even though they are building nuclear, you still have India and China building coal-fired power plants like they're going out of style. And I think as we can develop more nuclear and potentially more SMR to go along with big reactors, hopefully we see those power mixes really start to shift in a very meaningful way towards nuclear. But that being said, I mean, that is, again, sort of the exponential move that we could see in uranium if we start to see that happen. As it stands right now, it is a commodity. And when you get into commodity cycles, you know, it's not as easy as corn. If corn prices are high 1 year, the farmers go out and plant more corn next year and prices drop because there's an oversupply. When you're looking at a mined commodity, you're really looking at, you know, a decade or 15 year cycle to be able to replace that sort of unmatched demand curve. And right now we're at, you know, close to 200 million pounds of demand every year, and mine supply is closer to 150 million pounds. So that's a shortfall that has had a secondary market to meet with inventories that were there after things got shut down after Fukushima. But with secondary supplies really being limited, we're looking at, you know, needing to have higher incentive prices. And you're seeing that even with uranium companies that are, you know, ramping up production now. And because they're trying to do things quickly, those incentive prices still need to continue to move higher. And that's going to be really exciting for uranium. And I think the other key piece to uranium and you know, when we look at other commodities, even oil, for example, I mean, we've had the European Union sanction Russia 18 times to try and stop their, you know, energy production of oil and natural gas. And yet it still flows on the global market, you know, through various countries. But we're looking at a market now between, you know, rare earths and critical minerals, where each country is saying, we don't have our own secure supply chain. It all flows through China. And I think uranium is going to be exactly that. And, you know, it has been stated already, the U.S. has started to build out a uranium strategic reserve again. So it's again going to be another commodity that's bifurcated more than gold, say, where you kind of have the big producing countries of Kazakhstan, you know, that uranium largely flows into and through Russia, and now into China as well, as they continue to build out. So countries in the West need to have more and more uranium supply. And that was a big part of Noble Plains' strategy from the beginning, was to really focus on the U.S. that had gone to producing 44 million pounds, one of the biggest uranium producers in the world, to producing nothing. And now with the supply chain shift from going from globalization to saying, hey, we need onshore and we need our own supply of this, because if, whether it's an event like COVID or geopolitical issues, you need to have your own supply. And that's where we think there's going to be an extra push, both domestically within the United States and sort of friendly neighbors. And I would include, you know, Canada in that as well. Obviously a lot of uranium in Northern Saskatchewan. But we think that's just an extra piece of the puzzle and an extra tailwind when it comes to, you know, executive orders like we've seen out of the Trump administration, and extra emphasis on being able to move projects along more quickly will come from that. So again, a very long-winded answer, and there's so many facets to it, whether it's, you know, just supply and demand, or it's price, or it's geopolitical pressures and permitting and that sort of thing. But I think it's that complete picture that give you just so many different tailwinds, both as a company and then also just to the uranium price. And I think that's where you're going to see things really start to move. I mean, the big conference for the sector where a lot of buyers and sellers get together is the WNA conference, beginning of September in London. That kind of kicks things off again after a slower summer period. So if you're getting into the space, you know, take the next couple of weeks, really be doing your research. I think, you know, it's potentially start to see prices move before then. We already saw the Sprott Physical Uranium Trust try to kickstart the market. Obviously there's demand. That was a $200 million US financing to be buying pounds again. And they have been, they still have some dry powder to buy more pounds to, again, sort of sop up any extra pounds that were available in the spot market. So as things start to ramp up this fall, we think that's when, you know, they could really start to move rather quickly when it comes to prices.
Yeah, I would agree with everything you said, especially with the demand. I think the demand is here. It has been somewhat reflected in the price, but not really. And I think really where the value is in mining companies similar or such as yourself. So Drew, give me your website. How can people find you, and give me the exchanges that you're traded on and your ticker symbols?
Yeah, our website, Noble Plains Uranium, or nobleplains.com. We also have a Plains Perspective is a weekly piece that we put out, you know, explaining ISR, explaining what we see in the nuclear cycle. So again, a good educational piece for people. Sign up there to get that emailed to you or go find it on our website. On Twitter, we try and stay active as well. Noble Uranium is our Twitter handle. Keep up to date with us there. And we're on the TSX Venture, NOBL, and down in the US on the OTCQB, NBLF, or NBLXF, sorry, at the end, I always get that one confused. But that's where they can find us. Feel free to reach out on the contact us on our website if you have any additional questions. We'll continue to be keeping our newsletter people up to date with all our news coming out. We do have what I think will be some very exciting catalysts over the coming weeks and obviously over the coming months as we continue on our journey.
Okay, excellent. And all investors and listeners and viewers of this channel, stay tuned for more news. Thank you so much, Drew. Really appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, Andy, really appreciate being on with you and look forward to doing it again.
Yep, absolutely. Thank you.
Cheers.